Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS. U.S. Marine Frank Woodrich recently receiving no jail time after pleading guilty to the killing of 24 Iraqi civilians in 2005. The incident occurred following the detonation of a roadside bomb that killed a fellow Marine. So was this a circumstance of an action in the fog of battle, or does training contribute to these kinds of incidents? To discuss that, I'm joined by the author of the new book, At the Crossroads of Justice, My Lai and Son Thang, American Atrocities in Vietnam. Attorney and historian Paul Noto is the author who analyzed the training, leadership, and policies of the U.S. military. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is certainly a very dark issue to study and to write about. What led you to focus on this particular topic in your book?
Well, I was too young to serve in Vietnam, but I remember it well. And I think as an attorney, I thought it was very interesting that in these cases there were a similar fact pattern, but there were different outcomes of the court-martials. So I thought it was kind of interesting to analyze, you know, how and why this took place and see how it relates to what's going on today, which is interesting because, as you know, we were, you know, in two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So there are some similarities to Vietnam and Afghanistan, and see how things have changed. And I think things have changed quite a bit, but still there are these incidents that are sometimes still crop up in the public eye.
Part of the problem, it seems, whether it's in Iraq, Afghanistan, or in Vietnam, is that many times with guerrilla warfare, the combatants are dressed as civilians. They use civilians as shields. How are American soldiers supposed to respond when they can't differentiate between the two?
Well, I think that comes from training, and I think we've made great strides in improving our training, and I think technology has made it so much better that there are less and less civilian casualties, which is a positive. I think, unfortunately, when you have these incidents like you had at Haditha, this was not a situation of a fog of war. This was a sort of retribution. It appears. I mean, you had 24 dead bodies, mostly women and children. So our soldiers are trained in the rules of engagement. I think they understand, you know, that they have to defend themselves as well. They should. But they also have to be very careful about, unnecessary deaths, particularly when you're in a foreign country and we're trying to win over hearts and minds, which is part of the policy. I mean, you just can't, you can't win the war without winning some public support from the people you're fighting for.
So in this case, in Haditha with Woodridge's team, this was not a situation where they went out looking to do this. One of their fellow soldiers was killed. He then told his soldiers to, quote, shoot first, ask questions later while searching the surrounding houses. Is there any justification considering the immediate danger that they might have felt they were in?
Well, no. I mean, certainly, and I think he would acknowledge that was an improper order to give. I mean, you can't shoot first and ask questions later because you have innocent people getting killed, which was the case. I mean, you had, I think, 24 dead bodies, and his sentence is quite light. So I think this is, from a propaganda standpoint, something that only helps our enemies because it just makes us look like, you know, we're not aggressively prosecuting our soldiers who commit crimes, and I think killing innocent people is a crime on any level. So it's unfortunate, I'd say. I mean, not that our soldiers aren't stressed and that they aren't in danger, but in this case, it appeared that this was essentially to go get even because someone was killed on their patrol, and there's no necessarily direct evidence that the people that they killed were responsible for the death of that soldier.
So in your book, At the Crossroads of Justice, My Lai and Son Thang, American Atrocities in Vietnam, what did you find out about how these massacres occurred and how the training of the soldiers played into that?
Well, it's interesting that most people don't like to kill, and that in order to make our soldiers more efficient at their jobs, we have to train them to kill. And there's ways you do that, and one of the ways is you desensitize them from killing, whether it's through groupthink, or making them feel that the enemy is less than human. And in Vietnam, there was a fair amount of that. I mean, much less so today, but in Vietnam, there was a sense that the Vietnamese were treated as less than human. There was, you know, comments called like the Mir Gook rule, and they used, you know, language like that in talking about them. And this was about the civilians as well as the enemy. So we had a situation where very, you know, average, normal young boys, American boys, were sent over there, and literally this group of them became, you know, mass murderers. Now, most of our soldiers were honorable and did a great job, but this group, you know, was poorly led. They had low morale. There was a breakdown in command discipline, and they just went crazy, and they murdered a lot of innocent people, and it was a real stain on America. And I think that we've learned the lessons from that, and then part of it is training and leadership. And in this case, you know, there was just very poor leadership, and the training really failed. And I think now we understand in a counterinsurgency that you have to make an effort to win over the hearts and minds of the population, because otherwise, you're militarily, you're ultimately going to fail.
I'm talking to attorney and historian Paul Noto. He's the author of the new book, At the Crossroads of Justice, My Lai and San Thanh, American Atrocities in Vietnam. So, Paul, did we change in some ways the way we train our soldiers? You say that we're winning hearts and minds a little more. How effective is that, and how does that avoid some of the realities that occur when soldiers see their fellow comrades die, and there's an emotional reaction to that?
Well, I think we have changed a lot. I think the military has done an excellent job of improving on training. For one thing, they don't dehumanize the enemy. I mean, I think at this point our soldiers understand the enemy, you know, is one we must respect, although we do have to destroy them if attacked. But I think that we understand that winning over hearts and minds is a critical component of any counterinsurgency, and we have to exercise restraint, as difficult as that can be under certain circumstances. I think it's important to understand, because our enemies will try and, you know, trap us into these situations when they use, you know, human shields to get us to commit mass casualties of civilians, and then they use it as a propaganda tool. So our technology is much better. I think we've done a much better job of training. There are much more, you know, I hate to say it, but lawyers are involved in planning wars now and advising on the law of war. And I think our military takes a lot of time and makes a great effort in trying to minimize civilian casualties as much as possible, because we live in a 24-hour news cycle. We live in a much more transparent world. So these types of incidents aren't going to be, you know, hidden any longer. I mean, these are things that are going to come out quickly. As you saw in Afghanistan with the Marines urinating on the bodies. I mean, these are things that people videotape, and next thing you know, it's on YouTube. So we don't have the luxury of covering up anymore. So I think all of us have to be aware of the fact that in today's world, you have to be sensitive to these type of propaganda issues. And I think if we're going to project American power abroad, we want to make sure we're projecting American values.
When you look at Iraq and Afghanistan, some would argue that we have really not made friends in either place. We have policies where, you know, if there are casualties, we'll pay families for them and so on. Is that part of what we've learned, that there needs to be some remuneration made for a death, but that the population may never really view us in a favorable way?
Well, that's an interesting point. You know, I think that in Afghanistan, there are parallels to Vietnam in that, you know, it's a country with porous borders. It has a fairly corrupt, you know, central government. The indigenous population doesn't really like us. So I think there's a real challenge there. And I think we've tried. I mean, I don't think it's we should assume that we just pay the money and they're always going to hate us. I mean, I think that we've done some very good things in Afghanistan, and I think a lot of Afghanis appreciate it. There's always going to be an element of the population that we can't get to, and they're not going to like us. But I think if we can show them that we've liberated them and given them the tools to go forth on their own and set up their own country and their own government, that's all we can do. In Iraq, I'm shocked that more of the Iraqis don't like us, considering what they lived with Saddam Hussein. But again, you know, part of that is cultural, and if they don't want us to be there in Iraq, you know, we have no choice but to leave. At this point, they're a sovereign country, although I think from a defense standpoint, we should have had some presence, because I think it's a flashpoint in the world, and I think we need to be, you know, available to assist them as they make that transition to a full democracy.
Paul Noto, an attorney, historian, and the author of the new book, At the Crossroads of Justice, My Lai and San Thanh, American Atrocities in Vietnam. Paul, where can folks get your book?
It's on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
All right, Paul, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much. It was great to be with you.
And we'll be right back with more. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.